And Kevin, the draft is tomorrow. We'll find out where Askarov will go. And I spent the weekend looking at the last 50 years of drafting. And, you know, the number I came up with was 200 games was considered, like, you know, that means you're an NHL player. You play 200 games. You know what? You've been around a long time. And if you draft a player who plays 200 games, you know what? That's a pretty good draft pick. Obviously, there's some that are more elite than others, but that's how it goes. And, you know, each year I was looking at goaltenders and, you know, the most ever in one draft class of goalies who ended up playing 200 games. And I know that's a little bit higher than most. It was actually in 1994 and 1995. And recently, though, in 2012, there were six goalies who played the 200 games. And, you know, we've seen two and three and two, and then I stopped after 15. But we're actually starting to see the numbers creep up a little bit more where teams, they don't necessarily draft them high, Kevin, but they're making better draft picks with the goalies.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's because they're cautious, right? Like there's not as many being picked overall, I would guess, be another trend that you spotted, right? Like, there's just the totality isn't there. And so you are a little pickier in terms of where you're going to take your risks. I just think there's other ways to find goaltenders. We've seen that change in terms of the number of options coming from overseas after, you know, you see it from Russia where they're coming in, you know, early 20s. Some drafted, some not. But, you know, a lot, you know, guys like Bobrovsky, two-time Vezina Trophy winner, not drafted in the NHL. And I think there's kind of a gap there where you can find those types of guys, your David Rittich type guys, that just places less of an emphasis on using those picks for goaltenders. So I'm not surprised as the numbers go down that the number of successes goes up.
Kevin Woodley from Ingle Magazine, NHL.com. Joins. So, Kev, what are you hearing on the goaltending carousel? Let's start with Markstrom. Still no contract in Vancouver. I know Robin Leonard signed one with Vegas. So what are you hearing on Markstrom?
I have a hunch he gets to market. I think this is a game of chicken going on here in Vancouver, where they have a number in terms of not just salary, but term, how long they want to go. And they're kind of counting on him wanting to be here. And I do believe he does, that his first choice is here, not just because he believes in the core and he's a big part of that, but in terms of the relationship with the goaltending coach, the strides his career has made working with that goaltending coach in Ian Clark, and the desire to continue making those steps. You know, this would be his first choice too, but they painted themselves into a situation both with cap and sort of the future and expansion draft and Demko as an option where they don't necessarily want to go as long as he would like to. And so it's a game of chicken. I think they may lose. I think he hits the open market, and I think there are going to be a number of teams that, I don't know about open the vault, but they're going to have offers at least in terms of the number of years that, you know, are going to be beyond where the Canucks want to go. So, yeah, it's tough. Like, I think he can be a really good goaltender for the next 5 years. I actually think they believe that as well. But so far, there's sort of been an unwillingness to go that far. And if other teams are willing to, you know, to take the plunge at 5, 6, 7 years, and you're Jacob Markstrom, and you're going to be 31 by the time the next season starts, you know, it's not like you can say, oh, you know, I'll bet on myself and have another couple good years and hit a home run a couple years from now in unrestricted free agency. You kind of got to take the money now, no? Like, I wouldn't blame them. I think you have to. I think there's too much uncertainty out there. I think that as an older goaltender, if he were to, you know, roll the dice and hit the market, you know, trust hitting the market again in 2 or 3 years, you know, he's in an age window where teams aren't generally looking to pay big dollars towards goaltenders. So, my hunch is he hits a market. My hunch is he ends up somewhere else, because I think I just don't see the Canucks being able to give him what other teams will be willing to give him. And it's too bad, because he's a perfect fit here, and he's done a lot of growing here. But I think my bet would be at this point that his career continues elsewhere, despite the fact that both parties would like to have him stay here.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. Kevin, Devan Dubnyk trade, which has been rumored for a few days, is now official. He goes to the San Jose Sharks for a fifth-round draft pick. you look at Dubnyk and Jones now as the tandem, and you know, Devin Dubnyk went through a lot. It's really hard to, I think, describe what he went through. His wife almost died. She was very sick. They got three young kids. I don't care who you are. That, you know, he put his priorities on his family, as he should. So what do you make of Devin Dubnyk? Do you think he can rebound, or did you see parts of his game that are a concern for you going to San Jose?
The answer is kind of a bit of both. Absolutely, I think he can rebound. I think the Sharks are convinced he can rebound with them, in part because some of the things that slipped in his game are tied to the work that wasn't done last summer. And I've talked to you about this before, how last summer was the first summer that he didn't go back to Kelowna in the off season, and he didn't work with some of his off-season consultants, some of the guys I work with, including his trainer, Adam Francilia, who just happens to be under contract as a consultant with the San Jose Sharks. So I think they like that fit. In terms of a friend being there on a not a daily basis, but on a more consistent basis to try and help drive home the importance of sticking with that program. He does a lot of his programs remotely, and Devin would have had access to that, but it was hard not to see a slippage there, both in terms of physically, in terms of the way his body moved and the biomechanics and how they translated onto the ice. So I think they can reset that. They're actually in the process of doing the same thing with Martin Jones right now. He's been up to Kelowna a number of times on and off the ice. Again, trying to put more efficiency in his game, which is an area that had slipped, not just in terms of physically, but in terms of how changing your physical movement patterns actually allow you to move more efficiently on the ice. So Aaron Dell had done that the year before and had better success last year, and I think they're hoping that that's something that Devin Dubnyk can get back to. When I did video at the end of the season of Devin Dubnyk's game for a consultant we both work with, I could have overlaid the video from his Oilers days. Like, he had regressed in how he played. Some of the things that he improved to get to where he was had slipped. And so I think they believe they can hit reset on that. But unless the team hits reset defensively, and Bob Bugner is there as the coach now full-time, he'll have his first full season, unless they can change some of the things that they do defensively with that personnel, and obviously Carlson and Burns are the big two, I do wonder about the fit here. Because when I look at the analytics, some of the areas that Dubnyk struggled the most with over the past 2 years, and again, some of these will be fixed incrementally by the changes they plan on making, but at the end of the day, this isn't just last season, I mean over the past 2 years, the areas he struggles the most with also happen to be the types of chances the Sharks give up almost the most of. And that is slot line plays and rebounds off clear sight. And those are two areas that are red flags in Devin's game, and those are two areas the Sharks give up a ton. So you can fix some of that in Devin, both off and on the ice with the work they plan on doing. But unless you fix some of it with the Sharks and how they defend, it's hard to see this as a great fit. You know, we talk about horses for courses in golf. It's hard to see this as a great fit statistically with where Devin has struggled the past 2 years and the types of chances that the Sharks give up. Unless those things change, we could be talking about this as a really bad fit not long from now.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine, NHL.com, joined us. Ken Holland today expressed that, you know what, he's gonna fill his goaltending spot. He has one in Costman. He's looking for another one via free agency. He mentioned, hey, Mike Smith still wants to play, so you know that's in play. I think he's being very professional there. I don't see them happening. When you look at the free agent goaltenders, now obviously if Markstrom comes free, I'm not even sure Edmonton's in the ballpark just because of salary cap or not. But who do you see as a good fit? Who's scheduled to become a UFA on Friday?
I guess it all kind of depends on what the ask and what the price is. You know, I you don't want to know who's a good fit, who's not scheduled to become a UFA on Friday? Marc-Andre Fleury. That guy can still play. I know you're not spending $7 million on him for the same reasons they can't be in on Jacob Markstrom. But Marc-Andre Fleury can absolutely still play. He's under contract for 2 years, which is kind of in that window as your young kids develop there in terms of when they might be able to contribute, and matches, I think, with the Koskinen contract. And if Vegas has accepted, and my understanding in talking to goalie coaches around the league is that there seems to be a sense that Vegas knows they're going to have to eat money here. That guy, if you can get him with them retaining, and maybe not even half, maybe even if it's just $3 million out of the $7 million, can still play at a very high level, especially if you have a goalie coach who can sort of put some of the building blocks in back in place that have slipped since he left Pittsburgh. He was really good at the end in Pittsburgh under Mike Bales. Was really good early in Vegas. The longer he was in Vegas without that type of technical coaching, the looser he got in terms of his positioning, in terms of his play around his posts. In the playoffs, when it counted, everybody points to the numbers overall, but they include the round-robin game that wasn't great for him, the exhibition game that wasn't great for him. When it mattered, when it was an actual postseason game, he was really good. I still think this guy can play. There are things to be said about what he brings to your room, both in terms of the passion, the work ethic, and the mentality. Like, his positivity, we all know about his smile, but also just, like, he loves the game and he loves to work at it. And there's just a passion there that I think could help them in a lot of ways. So, outside of unrestricted free agency, because the problem with UFA is you're probably going to have to go longer term to get the top tier guys. If you want a Hudobin, the cost, as I understand it, is going to be like 3 years, $3.6 million. Are you willing to go to age 37 on Anton Hudobin? You know, maybe a Thomas Greiss is a guy that I've heard a lot. Maybe you can get him for 2 years. But the other guys above that, you're probably not bringing back Cam Talbot. So the other guys, the Holpes, like, you're looking at least 3 years to get that type of a goaltender. And what Fleury brings you is the fact he's only under contract for two. And I'm convinced that he can be really good for another 2 years. And I think they believe that too. The question mark is how many other teams see it? And does that create a situation where Vegas has to eat less of the salary in one situation than they might in another just because he is attractive to teams? Beyond that, like, you know, again, short term, I think a guy like Thomas Greiss might be a good answer. Nothing's going to bug him in terms of the market. Like, everything is water off a duck's back. It may drive you a little crazy, Jason. Trust me, that is not, like, I love Thomas Greiss as a person, but not as an interview. He's not filling your notebook anytime. Even if I dig in on goaltending, he just kind of shrugs. It is what it is. But beyond that, like, you know, you tell me, like, can you afford to go 3 years on Anton Hudobin? Like, 3.6 isn't a bad number, and I hear that's what it's going to take, but you got to go 3 years. And, yeah. I just don't know if that's something they're interested in.
No, I wouldn't think so. The Minnesota Wild are a team now that would likely be looking for a goaltender, I would think. Maybe Marc-Andre Fleury, maybe Darcy Kemper, or maybe they go the free agent route. But I'll say this for Bill Guerin. He learned under Jim Rutherford in Pittsburgh, and he's following suit. He is not afraid to make trades. He made two separate ones with San Jose today. He's made other ones here since becoming GM. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him be calling Vegas or Arizona to see if he could pry one of those two goalies away.
Well, and obviously a guy who would know Marc-Andre Fleury very well from his time in Pittsburgh, right? And that's what I mean. Like, the odd thing about Fleury is we all sort of know that Vegas is, like, the consensus is Vegas will have to eat salary there. And yet if they have five teams calling about him, are they able to play how much of that salary down significantly? Because as much as salary cap would be a huge issue in Edmonton as it would be here in Vancouver, maybe it's less of an issue in Minnesota. I mean, I know they have everybody has cap situations right now, well, most of the teams, but to a certain degree. And does a guy like Bill Guerin have a leg up in terms of convincing Marc-Andre Fleury to come there versus especially, say, a Canadian market somewhere else? So I think that's a good link between those two. Let's hope, as much as I love that Bill Guerin is being assertive with his decision making, let's hope that he's a little better when it comes to assessing his goaltending and how he handles his goaltending than Jim Rutherford, because he's turned Fleury to Murray to Jari, and none of those are bad things, but I'm not super convinced that the process and the way it's gone has made them better overall.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. You mentioned Hudobin. The term is the interesting one, you know, especially 3 years for a lot of teams, wondering, hey, can this guy, you know what, can he do it? Can he go long term, or is he, you know, can he split the duties? Can he be the main guy again? We'll see. Where do you see Matt Murray landing?
That's a tougher one because interestingly enough, Matt Murray is, you know, remember when we talked about, to me, the question marks on Matt Murray were about his ability to make changes. And that some of the things he had success with when he won those two cups just don't work in today's NHL. And we talked about narrowing his stance and things like that. Well, the team that just acquired a goaltender in Devan Dubnyk, Adam Francilia, the trainer there, also works with a lot of goalies privately. And Matt Murray's one of his clients. And he was just up in Kelowna as well. And that is one of the things they're trying to work on, or they are working on, is getting him narrowed up in that stance. And I saw signs, I thought, last year that the Penguins were working on it with him and that he was making that adjustment, but that it would take time. There are other elements of Matt's game that are very attractive, but they aren't going to work unless he becomes more mobile. And you can't become more mobile by staying locked in low and wide. So to hear that that transformation continues this summer is very encouraging, and I think that other teams would be encouraged by that as well, because I'm not the only one seeing this in terms of how his setup and how his stance prevents him from having success in a game that is evolving quickly and becoming much faster laterally in front of him. Where he ends up, to me, it's a question mark of what he gets in arbitration or what he could get in arbitration and a willingness to sign perhaps even below that number. Like, to me, he remains for teams a guy for all the pedigree that is still something of a reclamation project. And as much as that may not be fair from his eyes in terms of what he's already done in his career, that's just the reality. And you're probably not going to commit, even if you commit a little more dollar, you're probably not going to commit term until you've seen that that work can pay off, can translate, that at the first signs of pressure or when things get busy, he doesn't revert to form, to see that this is a short-term project and not a long-term project. So there's a little bit of, for Matt Murray, it kind of becomes almost like a show-me contract, kind of like Connor Hellebuck signed with the Winnipeg Jets. What I'm not sure is which team sees him, because there are other teams that see him much more positively than that. And so it's a kind of a matter of fit for the Penguins. Can they find one of those teams that don't think anything needs changed or don't think much needs changed and think as is, just in their environment, he will be better? Or are you selling to a team that sees it as more of a project, and their willingness to buy into that project is going to depend on how willing Matt is to sort of commit to it, not just on the ice because he already is, but in terms of taking a prove-it contract versus looking for everything he can get right now in terms of salary and term.
Kev, great stuff, man. We might talk to you later this week about the draft and free agency. We might be calling you back on Thursday or Friday. Okay, buddy?
It would be my pleasure. I expect this marketplace to shift rapidly. Let me give you one thing before we go, because tomorrow's the big day for Yaroslav Askarov. As we hear all these things about him over the next couple of days, and no question, he's an incredible prospect. If you read a scouting report, however, that doesn't mention concerns about rebound control, and that's not really a fair generalization, but the reality is, the lack of everything off the pads and everything back out in front of him, the amount of rebounds he gives up, then I suggest you find another scouting report, because every goalie coach I've talked to, even the ones that are convinced he's going to play at a high level, and most are convinced he will play in the NHL, the only question mark is at what tier from the people I talk to, but even those that are all in on him can see the issues with the rebound control as one of the first ones they identify as needing improved. So if you're hearing someone talk about him and you're reading a scouting report on him, and I've seen these quotes from scouts that he has good rebound control, I suggest you find another source for your goalie scouting knowledge.
Kev, great stuff, buddy. We'll talk to you later this week.
All the best.